This is the Timberwolves Talk podcast. I am Michael Rand, Chris Hine here as well. It is Friday afternoon. It's been a long All-Star break, kind of an interesting, weird almost, like, dip right after, you know, they get all these new guys. Russell plays two games. They get a look at Beasley and Hernan Gomez and James Johnson for a few games. Then they have like this 9-day break where, you know, they get to work a little bit when they come back. But, you know, it's almost like kind of not starting over, but almost like, you know, reintroducing ourselves to this reintroduction now that they're back on the court Friday night against Boston. A lot to get to, obviously. We've done one of these since all the trades happened, but we've actually got to see these guys a little bit on the court, seeing how these things are mixing together. And Chris, you wrote something for Friday's paper that I think sets us up well for both the second half of the season, or second half, the last third of the season, really, and this podcast. Kind of, you know, they're 16-37. As much as Malik Beasley might want to say, "Hey, we're trying to make the playoffs," which I thought was funny, by the way, that D'Angelo Russell, not long after that, said, "Well, so, we're not really trying
to make the playoffs." So
yeah, so we can kind of. I thought that was interesting. The backcourt has a different idea of what's at stake, but really, what's at stake for the rest of the year is kind of figuring out how all these pieces fit together. You know, who's worth keeping around? Right. What else do they still need? You know, it's probably a better chance to fairly assess Ryan Saunders to a certain degree, because they've been playing this style that didn't really match the personnel for quite a while. Now at least the personnel is a little bit bigger fit. But we need to start right off the bat with Karl-Anthony Towns, because he's a big piece of all this. One of the only two players who's been here for the entire Gerson Rosas tenure. Left wrist injury. I will give you my hot take in a minute. I want to hear your newsy update on where we are with that injury.
I had a second opinion, I believe, yesterday or today on that. And, you know, we're awaiting word. We are recording this at about 1:30-ish on Friday. Ryan Saunders said to expect something a little later today. I'm just guessing based on the fact that Towns has this thing wrapped, that he wasn't even trying to catch passes when he was on the court doing a little shooting around. He was shooting one-handed the other day.
Yeah.
It looks like he's going to be out for at least a little while here.
Yeah.
Now, the severity of it, we don't know, and I think that's what they're trying to nail down with these second opinions. Whether or not surgery is going to be required, I think, is a part of that. We'll find out probably in a few hours. But it looks like that this next stage of the Timberwolves experiment, for at least initially, is going to have to resume without Towns.
Right.
So
the timing of this allows for so back on the old Access Vikings podcast, back when Matt Venzel was the Vikings beat writer, I did a segment every week called Hit Me With a Hot One. And it was basically I had a hot take for Matt. The backstory was someone I was playing blackjack with was shouting, "Hit me with a hot one," when a card came out. So I've got a hot take.
I don't like where this is going.
I've got a hot take. I don't think Towns plays again this year. That's my hot take.
I don't know that that's necessarily a huge hot take. I think
it kind of is if they're saying.
Maybe a little bit, but I mean, it's certainly, I would say that the last few days and the way we haven't heard anything about this, it definitely puts it into play.
Like the where we are in the season.
Yes, with, all that taken into account, yes.
29 games left. I know they're eager to see Towns and Russell play together, but they've got time to see that. They've got an off-season. They've got, you know, 4 years of Towns under contract, 3 more years of Russell under contract to see how that all comes together. I just, once you start talking about second opinions and, you know, out indefinitely, multiple games right off the bat. They didn't even classify it as like a day-to-day. It was kind of like right out of the chute, it was, you know, that this is an issue. And, you know, frankly, this is a team now that I would never suggest the team would tank, but that they can be cautious with their star players down the stretch, especially when they have managed to keep their 2020 first-round pick and not trade it away. That pick has value to them, not some other team right now. If they were to lose some games down the stretch here while still learning a lot about Malik Beasley, learning a lot about Juancho Hernan Gomez, learning a lot about D'Angelo Russell.
Yep.
So just the pieces make me think we don't see Towns for the rest of the year, or if we do, it's kind of a very, very late kind of token appearance right at the end of the year, that this is going to be, you know, at least a 20-game thing for him.
I don't think that's based on, you know, just what we've seen and heard, all that unreasonable to think. I think it's definitely on the table that he could potentially miss the rest of the year. You know, and the rest of the year is, what, 8 weeks?
Yeah, it's 29 games. So it's,
So if this is a thing that keeps him out, you know, if it's a 2-month injury, that's it.
That's the season, right? Especially if we hear surgery.
Yeah,
surgery tells me right away that, like, then there's going to be a timetable of weeks, and then weeks can stretch, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, is he really going to come back if it's early April, something like that? They could just say, shut it down, precaution, make sure it's 100%, things like that.
Correct,
this is kind of what teams do in this position. I have no inside knowledge that he's going to be shut down for the year. I want to make sure that's clear, but that's just how it feels. That's my sense based on how this is playing
like
out.
Like I said, I don't think it's all that unreasonable. And again, I don't have any inside info on that either. Other than that, I think we're looking at least a period of time where he's not going to be on the court, whether it's a matter of 5 or 6 games or a couple weeks or the rest of the year remains to be seen. On the one hand, you know, you wanted to see at least get an early look at what this chemistry project would look like between Russell and Towns, and, you know, at least for the time being, you're only going to have one game of it, which was that Toronto game. But that's not to say that it's the rest of the year is a total wash with him out. You still have a lot of other pieces who need to see where they fit. One thing that's going to be, I think, very interesting to watch, and I wrote a little bit about this in the piece today, if you look at Jarrett Culver's numbers when Towns was out with the knee injury, and then his numbers when Towns came back, there was a dramatic drop-off in Culver's numbers from about mid-January when Towns came back from the knee. Culver had about an 11-game stretch where he was playing really well. And then Towns comes back, and all of a sudden, he can't even get to double digits in scoring after about 10 straight games of getting double digits. So I'll be very interested to see where Jarrett Culver fits. He's going to be playing off the ball a lot more because, obviously, D'Angelo Russell is going to be running the show for 35-ish minutes a night at point guard. So, you know, Culver's going to have to be playing a lot off the ball. And just how comfortable is he in that role, we'll find out a little bit over these next 29 games here.
I thought Ryan Saunders had an interesting quote along these lines. I want to get into some other stuff in a minute, but he said, however long Towns is out, you know, the question presumably was, you know, how does this change things, or what does this mean for the offense and how you're able to kind of do the things you want to do? And he said, in a way, it will allow us to install more of our kind of free-flowing game with guards, with wings, and with James Johnson handling the ball. That, you know, he said, obviously, there will be thin on the front line. We're going to have to be creative, but also not sacrifice what we believe is the best thing for this team moving forward, that being the system. That sounds like a coach that's getting ready for a guy to not be back for a while.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. And I think that's fair to say. So yeah, but like he said, there's a lot more that they can do. This is not a total waste of time. These last 29 games, whether Towns plays or not, and you know, we as a paper were looking at this stretch, and we were kind of, I don't want to say dreading it, but like from a coverage standpoint,
before the deadline,
before
the trade deadline, absolutely.
And kind of how are we going to cover this team? But now, you know, there's stuff to look at, there's stuff to analyze and pick apart and write about, and I think I don't know about you, but it's still sinking into me that Andrew Wiggins, to me, that's the biggest part of this whole thing.
Yes.
The fact that Andrew Wiggins is no longer a Timberwolf hasn't sunk in yet.
I watched a good part of, I was just kind of up a little bit last night, I watched a good part of Golden State Houston, and it was Wiggins and Covington. I'm like, this is weird. It's weird to see him in a different uniform. It's weird to think he's not going to be, you know, not on the floor for so many minutes with the Wolves like he has been for the last, you know, 5+, almost 6 years.
Yeah. What else? What are you going to complain about next? Now that he's,
I don't know. They did.
Now that he's gone.
I don't know. I'll think. Don't worry. I'll think of something. I've always got, you know, It's like, it's kind of what I think of, like, well, man, what am I going to do on the Vikings podcast if they ever fix the offensive line? I don't know. I'll be at a loss for subject matter, but don't worry. I'll come up with something quick enough. But like you said, there are still things that we can learn about this team. I think the biggest thing, and you touched on it, is they got to get some good information about Malik Beasley.
Yeah.
This is, you know, he's of all the players that came back in the trades, he's the most interesting one outside of D'Angelo Russell. Mm-hmm. He's the one that they need to learn the most about in the shortest amount of time because he's a restricted free agent this summer. And while that gives them the right to match any offer, they want to know what the value is. They want to know what they would be buying if they do indeed, you know, make him an offer or match an offer or what. Like,
right.
What's his ceiling? And obviously the volume is going to go up. There's a lot of things to like about him so far, just that small kind of three-game mm-hmm. sample size. He seems like he's, you know, got some grit to his game. Seems like he's, you know, a pretty good team guy and can make threes.
Yes.
He's good on a lot of threes, but especially the corner threes, which they've been really poor on this year. He seems like a good system fit, but 29 games will tell us a lot more than three that we've
exactly.
seen so far.
Yeah, and that's the... That's the question. I think it's been kind of funny to see the reaction with Malik Beasley, at least in the small bubble that is Twitter.
People love him.
Going from barely knowing who this guy is
right.
to after like two games, like, are we going to have the money to be able to re-sign
right.
this
right.
guy? Like, very quickly that happened. We went from point A to point B on Malik Beasley there. I think he seems to be a good fit, and this is why they wanted to get him.
Yeah.
And why they presumably want to try and hang on to him for a little while here is because he can shoot.
Yeah.
And between Towns and Russell, you know, those are two guys that are going to obviously attract a lot of attention, and it should leave somebody like Malik Beasley open. And, you know, we look at what happened the first half of the year, first two-thirds of this season with this team and all the threes they were taking. They were, for the most part, I don't want to say that they were forcing up threes. They were taking open threes,
right.
at least to my eyes. They just didn't have shooters that could hit them on a regular basis. If you give Malik Beasley a 38% three-point shooter for his career, some of these open looks, it's going to look a little better, at least in theory, don't you think?
I think so. I think, yeah. right, like... I was gonna look up some stats quick, but just just in terms of the, you know, all the shots they missed this year. You're right. I think they were getting pretty good shots. I believe there was a point early in the year. I was trying to look it up on the fly. I can't find it quite yet, but there was a point earlier in the year where they were, you know, not only like close to the bottom in overall 3-point percentage, but like dead last in percentage on wide open shots. I think.
Yeah.
NBA.com defines that as closest defender being 6 feet or more away.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the, you know, that number right now, but they had a lot of shots that were there, but it's guys like Okogie and Culver and early in the season Trevion Graham, like guys that are willing shooters and guys that make them sometimes. Even Wiggins is not a great 3-point shooter; he's still below league average. He kind of goes up, goes down. But you know, in terms of that, yeah, I think having better shooters to take those wide open shots, and I think we've even seen it already so far to a certain degree.
We have
that they now have the players to do it.
Yeah. Along those lines, another thing that we talked about, or I touched on in my piece, was D'Angelo Russell and the shot selection.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That he generally has in his career in this year, too. The Wolves have done a good job of eliminating mid-range jumpers from their kind of repertoire on
yes.
a nightly basis. Andrew Wiggins, who was one of the big practitioners of this coming into this year, reduced significantly the number of mid-range shots he was taking per game. D'Angelo Russell comes in taking, I think, 4 per game was the number, and that makes him 17th overall in the league in taking mid-range jumpers. Are they going to try and curb that out of Russell? Will he be willing to curb it? You know, kind of this, how does D'Angelo Russell get his shots, I think, is worth monitoring, throughout the course of the year. He will take threes, but he also does like to operate in the mid-range as well. So I think that bears watching, when it comes to D'Angelo Russell the next 29 games.
Here's some good numbers for you really quick before we move on from that. I don't have the team numbers in front of me, but I've got the various Wolves players. This is 3-point percentages where the closest defender is 6 feet or more away, so wide open threes this year by percentage. Let's see. Trevion Graham, 26.4% was his make rate on wide open threes. Jarrett Culver, 31%. Keelan Martin doesn't play a whole lot, 29.3%. Josh Okogie, 27.4%. Shabazz Napier, 27.8%. So, I mean, that tells you right there that, you know, those guys were getting, you know, kind of combined probably like, if I can just add them up quick in my, you know, my rudimentary math here, you know, probably like 6 or 7 wide open threes a game combined, and they're making, you know, 2 of them on a good day, 2 out of 7. And, you know, Malik Beasley, small sample size, has had, looks like, 11 wide open threes in just his 3 games with Minnesota. He's hit 6 of them. James Johnson is 5 of 6 on wide open threes so far. And, like, those numbers will regress a little bit, but that tells you that a good shooter is going to make a lot of the shots that they were missing this year. Yeah. They just have flat-out better players to make those shots.
And it kind of goes back to what they were saying earlier in the season, what Gerson Rosas has said, which is that they wanted to install the system first and then get the players second. So, you know, that's kind of what they were looking at. And so they were looking at the kind of shots they were generating from the system. And it's like, oh, if we can get guys that can just, you know, hit a couple of these, we'll be in good shape, because we are getting the kind of shots I think that they anticipated early in the season.
And I think we've seen glimpses of that so far in the game flow. I mean, they obviously had 26 threes in their very first game against the Clippers. That was even before Russell played. Yeah. And then Toronto game, they were still, you know, they hung with Toronto pretty well, you know, through 3 quarters pretty much, and then, you know, Toronto kind of blew their doors off at the end.
Yeah.
And then Charlotte, they really should have won that game. That was, you know, kind of a collapse at the end, an all too familiar one. But they had like a 16-point lead, you know, in the third quarter. They were making everything in sight, getting the shots they wanted, and then they just kind of, you know, had the lapses that every team is going to have, but that the Wolves seem to have in particular. But you can see glimpses already of how this works better, and I'll be very curious to see, like, as they get more time together, as they get to understand how each of them plays, and kind of you can generate even more of those good looks with good ball movement and things like that. How does that work? Mm-hmm. Your point about Russell is a good one, though, because he did say, "I'm not going to stop shooting mid range. I got to make Ryan Saunders trust that I'm going to make enough of those that it's warranted
that it's
to shoot."
Right.
Whereas Ryan Saunders is probably of the mind of, yeah, that's nice, but they're still not high-value shots.
Right.
Like, you know, maybe within the context of a certain offense, like, if someone's good at him, like he has been this year, then like, I guess you give him a little bit more leeway, but still, there's shot values. There's shot values for a reason.
If you're hitting, I think he's at, what, 47-ish percent or so on these this year, which is higher than he's had in other seasons. But, yeah, if you're hitting those shots at a 47% clip, you can live with that. It's when you had the Wiggins-type numbers where you're hitting in the low 30s that they become a problem. So, yeah, I think if I'm the Wolves, I'm Ryan Saunders, and I say, hey, as long as you're hitting 45% or 50% and above on these shots, go ahead and take them. But the minute you start to tail off and dip into the 30s, then we have to really look at, is this worth it for everybody? So that would be my approach, is like, don't mess with it as long as it's working.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I do think, too, that, you know, kind of like you're saying, there's a push-pull in there between making a player second-guess their natural basketball instincts and getting them to understand the shot value, you know, the value of, you know, where they ideally will be shooting from in a perfect circumstance. But if a player is good at a certain thing that's kind of counterintuitive, then you don't want to take away their natural instincts too much and say, well, no, don't take that shot that you've been taking your whole life. You start second-guessing yourself on the court if you make too much of an emphasis, you put too much of an emphasis on shot values, I would think. But again, they're shot values for a reason. Like, Houston has been very good by shooting a bunch of threes. The Bucks are really good by shooting threes and going to the rim. Like, these are proven methods if you have the right players. And you know, D'Angelo Russell is probably better off shooting threes than he is, you know, 17-foot twos, even if he makes a lot of 17-foot
twos. Right, right. I'm with you there. I think with somebody like Russell, I think it's not as simple as like going to Andrew Wiggins, where you had
a struggling player in a history
there, where it never worked and wasn't really working, and say to him, look, this is not a good shot for you. I think it's a harder sell if you go to D'Angelo Russell, who is hitting him at a decent clip, to say, we need you to get rid of these.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's as easy a sell.
No.
So we'll see how that push-pull operates as we get a bigger sample size of him in a Wolves uniform here.
On the subject of Russell, too, something we talked about offline the other day, he doesn't look like he plays particularly fast in terms of, like, rushing the ball up the court. I think the speed, quote-unquote, in his game is more in getting them into the offense quickly and, you know, making the right
pass. Which is what they want.
Making the right pass, right, with precision. Yeah. But, you know, from a certain standpoint, if they wanted to, quote-unquote, play fast and push tempo, you got a guy now that doesn't really look like he does that and shoots a lot of mid-range twos. What makes him the right system fit then? Like, why were they so all in on this guy, who I like? I'm just, right. This is kind of the devil's advocate question, or maybe the more than meets the eye question.
First of all, his age. He's right in line with kind of Towns in terms of age.
1-2 in the draft that year.
They came in the same draft together.
Yeah.
The fact that he is such a prolific scorer, I think more efficient than Wiggins. They needed a point guard to run this offense.
Yeah.
They didn't have a point guard. Really, I mean, yeah, Jeff Teague, Shabazz Napier, right, but they didn't have a point guard.
No, they've been waiting for a while.
So he fills a position of need. But like you said, they do want to play up-tempo and get in the fast break and get in transition a lot, but they have said that part of playing fast is not necessarily going north to south quickly, but going east to west quickly when you're in the confines of the offense.
Yeah.
And he can do that.
Yeah.
And he can operate off the pick and roll as well as most players in the league, or better than most players in the league can. And especially with Towns, that could be a pretty lethal combination offensively.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, and we'll see if they have him push the tempo. I feel like that's something you could maybe work on a little bit with him to get him to push it a little more up the floor. So I don't think that's totally a lost cause in that sense.
So looking back on this in retrospect, by the way, like everything they did this past off season with point guard, which was, you know, Napier on a 1-year contract, keeping Teague, but understanding that was going to be expiring, not matching the Tyus Jones offer or really getting too serious about that.
Right.
That, I think you can view it through the lens of they were staying flexible and nimble in case this happened, but also I do wonder, like, how high their confidence level was that this was going to happen at some point, that they were going to be able to land D'Angelo Russell.
Seemed to be fairly high,
didn't it? It kind of feels that way. Like, they sure put a lot of eggs into a basket that didn't seem like a guarantee.
Even after he signed with Golden State, it wasn't as if the Wolves said, well, that's it. We've tried and we failed. Now we readjust our
right.
They never gave up
trying.
They
never recalibrated, no.
They never said, all right, well, now we're going to match whatever Memphis has for Tyus Jones. They let him walk out the door.
Right.
Probably in that sense did save the flexibility and that was why they let him walk, was they wanted to maintain cap flexibility. But you're right. Ever since he signed with Golden State, it never seemed like they gave up.
No.
And they knew that they could make this happen in some way, shape, or form.
It kind of seemed like it. I mean, it's just interesting that they maybe they had enough productive talks early, or they kind of had a sense that this deal could be there if both teams still wanted to do it. And I think the way that things played out for Golden State made it even more attractive to them, I would think, because it's, you know.
And the ability for the Wolves to help Golden State get under the tax.
Yeah.
When Golden State is going to be looking at a potentially more tax bills in the future when Steph and Clay get back and they're going to be contending. So getting under the tax and avoiding repeater status means a lot to you know, the billionaire owners of the league.
Speaking of the tax, the Wolves went into the tax barely this year, which doesn't seem like a huge deal. It only becomes a big deal right in the repeater sense. There's still a way, from what I understand, that they could get out of the tax this year if
line up right with the buyout of Evan Turner.
Yeah, if something happened with Evan Turner and if they bought him out and then he signed for enough with another team to offset that portion of his salary, is that how it works?
Yes.
There would need to be like another, I don't know what the offset amount would be, but I think it's
a little over a million.
Yeah,
something along those lines.
So he's just kind of in limbo right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not having a great year, but he does seem like the kind of guy that might be a buyout and sign candidate now that we're kind of into buyout season. You've seen a couple of those guys already. Houston just got one. I can't remember who it was. But there've been a few of those, and the Clippers just got a good one too.
I'm blanking on it too. I've seen all the reports recently too, but it's possible. We'll see how that shakes out. The Clippers did sign somebody, and they had
Reggie Jackson.
They had Reggie Jackson. They had worked out Evan Turner over the All-Star break. As Chris Haynes reported from Yahoo.
No relation.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Sorry.
no relation to me. So we'll see. But that being said, whether or not they get under the tax or not, they did make this move. If they have to stay in the tax, it's not a huge deal because Glenn Taylor signed off on going into the tax to make this happen. If they have to stay in the tax, they will eat it.
It's not a huge bill this year. The bigger deal becomes if, you know, next year if they are a repeater, which it doesn't look like they would be.
Should be able to get under the tax next year, even after signing Malik Beasley and potentially having two first-round draft picks next year. That should not be an issue given the fact that Alan Crabb's deal will be coming off the books and Evan Turner's deal will be coming off the books.
Right.
So they should be able to get under it without much of an issue. But yes, I think this was one of the reasons why they were able to make the trade was because of their willingness to go into the tax to help Golden State get under it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's maybe one of the reasons why they didn't have to give up another first round draft pick or something like that. So
good point.
So that one goes directly to Glenn Taylor, who, you know, takes a lot of heat from the commenters on the Star Tribune website,
which he owns,
the comment section that he owns. But they consulted with him and he did sign off on going into the tax. Yes.
One more thing before we get to Twitter questions. One other thing I'm looking to see is, I want to see Ryan Saunders coach in these 29 games. I want to see how this looks when he has players that more naturally fit his system. Because, you know, he took over as interim halfway through last year. He's got a holdover roster of a bunch of Thibodeau guys. They start to kind of clean that out in the offseason. You know, no Derrick Rose, no Taj Gibson. You know, they don't re-sign Tyus, though I'm sure he wouldn't have minded having Tyus back.
Right.
You know, Anthony Tolliver walks. So a lot of the guys that they had brought in as kind of, you know, veteran pieces to try to keep making the playoffs were already gone. But then, you know, they give him this roster and say, you know, go play this way, which I'm sure he wants to play this way. They're not just telling him how to play, but here's a roster that doesn't really fit with the way we want to play. You know, go install this system, try to make it work. But, you know, it's hardly close to a finished product, but they have a lot more pieces now. Malik Beasley, even a guy like James Johnson fits better. Juan Turner and Gobas, guys that are going to play. D'Angelo Russell, guys that play the way they want to play. So I think that's a much more fair opportunity to assess Ryan Saunders as a coach these next 29 games than we've gotten in any of his first, you know, 90 games as head coach.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Obviously, the other caveat you're going to add to that is, well, if Cat's out the rest of the year, then we really don't know what it's going to look like. But yes, you're right. Overall, the rest of the roster should be a good way to evaluate where Saunders is as a coach. I think it's pointing in the right direction in a sense that he did install kind of the way that they wanted to play, seemingly the way that they wanted it. Over the first half of the season, and now you surround him with better talent and more suitable talent for that system. and presumably it should work better. We will see. I don't know. Defensively is where this is going to be a huge issue, I feel like, down the stretch, and that needs to be addressed. And you know, obviously we'll see here just how this group comes together defensively in such a short amount of time. I think there could be some bumpy nights.
Yeah, especially, I mean, who aside from Naz Reid is a natural center on this roster right now?
Nobody.
Okay, so who played? What was their starting lineup?
Johnson was the five.
Johnson was the five.
James, you're going to look at James Johnson playing a little small ball center.
So against a lot of teams, that's probably not the worst thing in the world, but you're going to get eaten alive.
It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky.
Like Utah. I mean, Rudy Gobert is going to have a million and 12 points in that alignment. So it'll be interesting to see.
We'll see. We'll check it out on a Saturday or Sunday when they play Denver and Jokic as well.
Yeah, so I mean, we don't know how long Towns is going to be. We just know it's multiple games. Yes. At this point, yes. And we'll go beyond from there.
Yes.
Let's get to some questions. We have a few funny ones, some good ones. Tim Snell wants to know, should the Celtics pull off the greatest troll job ever and retire KG's number tonight? Well, it's a home game at Target Center, so that would really be a troll job.
Check back in April when the Wolves go to Boston.
That would be a better troll job. Although they've already said it's going to be during the 2021 season, presumably after KG is inducted into the Basketball Hall.
Yes, would be an all-time troll move to do that against the Timberwolves.
Don't rule it out. I mean,
maybe that's KG's.
There's a 1 in 41 chance that that happens. Telling you, there's a chance. Tim Snell wants to know. Oh no, that was Tim's. Ruslan Botov wants to know, have we reached the bottom or will this team go deeper into the depths of despair?
I feel like this is a question that you could get every year as a Timberwolves fan.
Maybe next year will be better.
Well, you know, I guess I would say it could still get worse in the sense that, okay, now you have presumably who this front office wants to be the face of the franchise for the next 4 years. Or 3 to 4 years with Towns and Russell. What if it doesn't work? Then where does that leave you? You've made the big move, right?
Right.
Now if it doesn't work, where does that put you as a franchise? So yes, I think it could get worse if this doesn't work out.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think they kind of have another mini grace period here where people are going to be kind of curious for the next 29 games and probably won't pay quite as much attention to wins and losses.
Yes.
But where they get into real trouble is if next year this isn't any better.
Yes, I agree.
I have a hard time imagining next year's going to be worse
than
this
year. That's what I mean, too. That's like, so, not necessarily this year, but like,
maybe they kind of have reached a mini bottom with those two long losing streaks.
Yeah.
I don't foresee them having a double-digit losing streak again this year, but they play a lot of good teams, and you never know, especially if Towns is out for a while.
Yeah.
Really quick, Ramball Stu wants to know, do you ever just remember Cherokee Parks? I hadn't really remembered him for a while.
I mostly think, when I think of Cherokee Parks, I think of those Duke teams in the 90s. And I think more of his Duke tenure than his NBA tenure. But yes, I do sometimes think of Cherokee Parks.
Yeah, I think of him occasionally. He's kind of like the poor man's Christian Laettner, who's also a Timberwolf.
Exactly. Yes.
And had a sister who played in a band whose name we can't mention on this podcast.
I don't know what that story
is. Dana Wessel with the kicker. KG is obviously the most deserving former Wolf to have his jersey retired. Who would be the least deserving?
This one's right up your alley.
Tons of candidates on the replies to this one, but probably my favorite one is the last one from Logan, who says Jimmy Buckets.
Hey, led them to their only playoff appearance in the last 15 years,
and then
right?
Burned it all to the ground. No way. I mean, imagine if he was the first player to actually get his number retired here. That would be that'd be something else. That's it for us. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for listening to the Timberwolves Talk podcast. StuckJimmy.com.